Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket of will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
We can't say we're gearing up for 2021 anymore because, well, it's here. Welcome into a brand new week, brand new day, brand new year of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. As always, happy to be along with you on the afternoon drive. We have a lot to get into today. We're going to put a heavy focus on the national sports front. It's Black Monday. You know, I don't take joy in seeing people lose their jobs, although typically if you get fired in the NFL, you're going to be taken care of. There are some great human beings that lost their jobs today, including Anthony Lynn of the Los Angeles Chargers. I don't know if you'll meet a more respected man across the realm of the NFL. And 7-9 was not enough for the Los Angeles Chargers. They made the announcement today that Anthony Lynn is out after 4 years as head coach. Had a winning record during those 4 years, but 33-31, and really just a struggle over the last couple of years to close out games. The statistic that is mind-boggling, and if you paid attention to the Chargers or if you're a Charger fan, I'm not rubbing salt in the wound, trust me. But in 2019, 9 of the 11 losses for the Chargers were by one score. And the same thing really popped up this year. And I think the biggest question regarding Anthony Lynn is how he manages the game late. Clock management's been a huge, huge problem for the Los Angeles Chargers. And so they move on from Anthony Lynn. Last night, news broke. The New York Jets are moving on from Adam Gase. It's not a surprise, but I had wondered if Gase was going to get one more year. I thought there was a chance of this happening. But the Jets, historically, they do not let go of coaches middle of the season. They don't do it. They wait till the end of the year. Adam Gase has a contract that's going to run through 2022. So see, that's what I'm saying. He's going to be well taken care of without a job. And I doubt he's without a job very long. Already Adam Gase's name is being mentioned as a potential replacement for Alabama's offensive coordinator spot, which was vacated when Steve Sarkisian left over the weekend to take a job with Texas. So Adam Gase, he probably doesn't have a spot in the NFL next year, but I don't believe there's any doubt he's going to be coaching somewhere. 2-14, 9-23 as head coach of the New York Jets, and it's just been disarray ever since he got there. Maybe it's not fair. I mean, if you go back and you look at the press conference, people were in an uproar with his wandering eyes, wondering what's going on with this guy. I know a lot of media members that work for the Miami Dolphins. None of them liked Adam Gase. Of course, he's attached to Peyton Manning, and it's a lot of the reason why he's gotten chance after chance, but it just didn't work in New York. And in my mind, the biggest failure for Gase, it's not the 9-23 record. It's not 2-14 this year. Jet fans will joke that maybe they won too many games. In my mind, the biggest failure for Adam Gase is the lack of development from Sam Darnold, who the Jets spent the number 3 overall pick in the draft just a couple of years ago on. That's why he was brought in, to mold Sam Darnold, and it hasn't worked out. Adam Gase gone. The Jaguars have fired Doug Marrone. He's been on the hot seat for the last couple of years, and just wondered, it was kind of like Marvin Lewis. It didn't go on as long as Marvin Lewis. But you just wondered how many lives Doug Marrone had as head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars, and now he is officially let go. We'll talk about those three spots. We'll also talk about the other three teams that will be looking for coaches, the Lions, the Texans, and the Falcons. So Black Monday is not huge, but it does bring its storylines. And then, of course, we're gearing up for the NFL playoffs, which will begin on Saturday. We're going to save playoff chit-chat for tomorrow. We may get into it a little bit later on. We'll take a look at the schedule, but there's heavy, heavy talk in the world of football today, and we also have to talk college football. The national championship is set. I'll be honest with you, I am surprised. Not surprised that Alabama is representing, but surprised that Ohio State easily defeated Clemson. I said on the show Thursday that Bama would beat Notre Dame, but the margin would be smaller than what was going to happen in the Clemson-Ohio State game. I was correct on that. Notre Dame loses by 17 to Bama, but I didn't anticipate Ohio State drubbing Clemson the way they did, especially with the way that game started. Clemson was having their way with Ohio State. It could have been 21-0 Clemson. I was just waiting for the doors to be blown off of Ohio State, and it just seemed as if Clemson wasn't really able to answer back. And so while we have plenty of time to preview the national championship between Ohio State and Alabama, we can talk about Notre Dame and Clemson. And the story over the weekend, was Notre Dame in a big game getting blown out again. And I actually thought that game was somewhat competitive. It was in the trenches. Alabama didn't blow Notre Dame out in the trenches. They got the best of the Irish on the outside, on the perimeter. Devontae Smith, who's a top 10 pick in the NFL draft, is just a special, special talent. Najee Harris, who may be a first-round pick as a running back, is very, very special. That Alabama offense is spectacular. I thought Notre Dame did fine in the trenches, but it's on the outside. They just don't have it around the end. And I just don't think it's Notre Dame. And we'll talk more about that a little bit later. The gap between 1, 2, 3, and moving forward 4 through 10. We'll talk about that later on in the show as well. Let's take a look at some of the other news coming out of the national sports headlines. Some bad news for the Las Vegas Raiders. They closed out the season with a win over the Denver Broncos. And then Josh Jacobs, Pro Bowl running back, arrested on a DUI charge earlier this morning, just hours after the team returned from that victory on the road against Denver. He was arrested after the police responded to a single vehicular crash near McCarran Airport. It was about 4:42 in the morning. Police suspected impairment. Jacobs was taken to the local hospital because of minor injuries from the crash. After treatment, he was transported to Clark County Detention Center, where he was booked for DUI. Jacobs' attorney said they would plead not guilty if the case gets that far. The Raiders did acknowledge the incident today. They said, quote, "We are aware of the situation involving Josh Jacobs. The organization takes these matters seriously, and we have no further comment at this time." It wasn't a terrible season for the Raiders. You see some improvement defensively. That team is a mess. But when you look at the positives, Josh Jacobs has been a positive. And you hate to see this. This kid's got a bright, bright future in the NFL. And again, not even 23 years old yet. Outside of that, we'll take a look at what's happening within the division of the AFC West. This involves the Denver Broncos. The Broncos will hire a new GM. John Elway is going to remain president of football operations. But the new GM and Vic Fangio will report to John Elway. He's just not going to be making the calls at GM anymore. Now, the vice president of player personnel is Matt Russell. He was offered the opportunity to interview for the GM role, but he has opted to retire instead. He's going to assist Elway in the search for a new GM. You know, maybe it's time. I've given John Elway a lot of credit on this show, and I will always give him a lot of credit for what he accomplished as general manager of the Broncos. I don't think you can overstate this. This guy took a team to the Super Bowl with an offensive identity, and they got smashed by the Seahawks. And 2 years later, two seasons later, I should say, they returned to the Super Bowl as a defensive juggernaut, and they waxed the Carolina Panthers, who were fantastic with the league MVP and Cam Newton. I mean, that's an overnight turnaround. Offensive juggernaut, defensive juggernaut, and he deserves a lot of credit for that. Since Peyton Manning left, I think the biggest problem with this Bronco team has been finding a new leader at quarterback. They didn't pay Brock Osweiler a lot of money. Kudos to the Broncos for that. They got out of that deal free. And regardless of what Bronco fans say today, they were upset that they let Brock Osweiler leave. There was a lot of belief in Brock Osweiler. Not all of Bronco fans, but a large portion of Bronco fans had belief in Osweiler. Elway said no. But since, there's been plenty of misses. Plenty of misses within the draft, plenty of whiffs in free agency, and I still do not believe that the Broncos have a quarterback. I still don't believe that. Elway's been in charge of the football operation since 2011. 5 AFC West titles, 2 Super Bowl appearances. The team has not made the playoffs since winning the Super Bowl. And it's a sad reality, but sports are a what-have-you-done-for-me-lately type deal. Bronco fans have forgotten about Super Bowl 50. That was 5 years ago. John Elway's a legend within that organization. Won 2 Super Bowls, brought another. Now they're going to look for a new GM. So that's some of the news coming out of the NFL. In the NBA, if you missed it last night, how about Steph Curry? The first 60-point game of his career. He scored 62. There was a lot of talk about Steph Curry being, quote, overrated. That's a relative term, right? Overrated in whose eyes? Is he one of the top point guards in the NBA? Yes, absolutely. But here's what was impressive about what Steph Curry did. His previous career high was 54. He becomes the first player since Kobe Bryant in 2005 to score at least 30 points in each half of a game. That's how long it's been since someone has done that. He had 22 in the first quarter. That was the 27th time in his career that he had scored at least 20 in a quarter. Scored 31 in Sunday's first half, 31 in the second half. Steph is still very, very good. You want to know the biggest difference? And I think this falls in line with the Steve Kerr talk as well. The Golden State Warriors do not have the same team that they once had, like a Kevin Durant and like a Klay Thompson. Now, this team is 3-3 because they're depleted, they're older, and at some point in time, the rebuild phase kicks up. Leave Steph Curry alone. This guy's dynamic. He fed off it. 62-point game. Plenty of action in the NBA tonight. The Utah Jazz will have the night off, but beginning of the 5 o'clock hour, we get Cleveland at Orlando. The Hornets will travel to meet the 76ers at 5 o'clock. 5:30 tonight, we get the Knicks and the Hawks, plus the Thunder will travel to take on Miami and Boston at Toronto. 6 o'clock tonight, Dallas at Houston. Milwaukee will host Detroit. Then we get Indiana at the Pelicans. And at 8 o'clock tonight, it's Sacramento at Golden State. So a full slate of NBA games. We're going to pause for just a moment. Local sports recap is coming up. Also today, the RPI was originally released for high school basketball. We'll look at that. We'll talk Black Monday, and we'll also talk college football. What's next for Clemson and Notre Dame? And we'll look ahead to the national championship, Ohio State and Alabama. That's all straight ahead right here on Drive Time Sports.
Now, this local Castle Country sports update with Jordan Buscarini from KOAL.
Reporting from the KOAL newsroom, I'm Jordan Buscarini with a look at local sports. On Wednesday afternoon, the Emory Spartan wrestling team traveled to the Sevier Valley Center in Richfield to participate in the 3A duels. And at the end of the day, it was Emory that came out on top as the number one team at the meet. Emory finished a perfect 6-0 and defeated the Carbon Dinos in the state championship. They ran away with the competition, defeating Carbon by a final score of 58-12. Over the course of the one-day tournament, wrestlers participated in 6 matches. Emory had 8 finish undefeated, including Jaron Allen, Briar Macarello, Hayes Dalton, Cove Johansson, Braden Howard, and Dwayne Farley. The win at the 3A duels marked the first ever for the school. And yesterday on KOAL's Drive Time Sports, we caught up with Coach Kurt Christiansen, and he talked about his team's performance.
Yeah, we had a ball. The boys all wrestled really good. We had 8 undefeated wrestlers on the week, and the team came out as the victors. And, you know, it was kind of bittersweet. We wanted to see Juabs Varsity and Morgan again, now that we've got our guys shuffled, but due to it being the holiday season and the COVID season, we missed a few teams there, but we'll take the win and wear it with a smile.
With the new year now upon us, Emory will finish out the weekend moratorium and then return to the mats next week. The schedule will be heavy throughout the remaining months of the winter sports season. Up ahead is the Tournament of Champions and the Gunnison Round Robin. Coach Christiansen continued by talking about the upcoming schedule.
We wrestle hard. You know, we'll have a tournament and a duel most weeks from here until the division championships. And once the division championships are over with, we'll have a week break and then hit state. So no rest for the wicked.
Now, while Emory was the top team at the 3A duels, Carbon came in at number 2. There was plenty to celebrate for Coach Ted Prettyman and his group. They were led by Bryce Judd, who finished a perfect 5-0 with a 145-pound weight class. Rosin Allred went 2-3. Trevor Jones 3-2. Brax Tapia at 126 finished 4-1. Parker Holt was 2-3. Colin Fawcett 3-2. PJ Howa finished at 3-2, as did Darren Gardner. Will Carmichael was 2-3. Hiram Nelson 3-2. And Easton Horsley, one of the top-rated 220s in the state, finished with a record of 3-2. The wrestling season will continue for both Carbon and Emory later this week. Up next, the two squads will host events taking place this Wednesday. And then over the weekend, they'll travel to Vernal for the Tournament of Champions. Stay tuned to Castle Country Radio. We will have more on the wrestling teams throughout the week. You can find more news, sports, and community events at CastleCountryRadio.com. Reporting, I'm Jordan Buscarini.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM, the play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
So now that the dust has settled and we know there's six coaching vacancies in the NFL, could have been a lot worse too. There are several teams that potentially could have been looking for new head coaches. You know, there were rumors floating around. For instance, in Cincinnati, Zach Taylor had the wow factor worn off of the Sean McVay coaching tree. I mean, let's be real. Zach Taylor didn't have the credentials to be a head coach. But Cincinnati obviously likes what he can do with quarterbacks. I thought Joe Burrow was having a great year. And so I see some similarities to what Adam Gase was supposed to accomplish when he was in New York compared to what Zach Taylor has. But we don't know if Joe Burrow is going to even play next year. Bengals say that Zach Taylor's their guy. He's not losing his job. And I think that was probably really the only other job that you had to worry about of the AFC. If you go to the NFC, Joe Judge is brand new with the Giants. The Cowboys and Mike McCarthy, I thought, was an interesting storyline. And Doug Peterson with the Eagles as well. It's a Super Bowl-winning coach, and they don't grow on trees. But there are questions there. I think you could question Matt Nagy in Chicago. I think you could question Zimmerman with the Vikings. You know, you look at the South. Everyone seems to be just fine right now in the South. And then in the NFC West, everybody's fine there as well. So there was the potential for a few more openings. I don't believe there's too many openings or not enough openings for the amount of coaches that we can expect to make that leap. I don't believe that's the case. Now, one rumor that I just found absolutely fascinating over the weekend was Jacksonville and Urban Meyer. I found this so fascinating. Could Urban Meyer make the jump and be successful in the NFL? A report is coming out from Bleacher Report, actually, that Urban Meyer wants somewhere around $12 million a year to lead Jacksonville. And so that got me thinking, what is the most attractable head coach opening right now in the NFL? And I think you can find positives all the way around for all six jobs. I mean, for instance, Atlanta. If you are about to begin the rebuild process with the Falcons, you have some pieces to help push that process along. If you want to move on from Matt Ryan, if you could find a place to put him, Julio Jones, you would find a taker for, I think, immediately. You know, you look at the defensive side of the ball and some of the big moves. Dexter Fowler was a guy that they brought in. If you wanted to move on from these guys, I think there's a place for him. You could add a little bit of draft capital. I don't know what the market would be for him, but there's some pieces that you could move if you're Atlanta, if you want to go the rebuild route. That's attractable. It's got to be attractable for a team builder. You know, in Houston, I think the culture is just a dumpster fire, and draft capital is a problem because you don't have a number one pick due to the Laremy Tunsil deal. You look at the cap, Tunsil is eating up a good chunk of it, so is J.J. Watt, and I love J.J. Watt, but he's nowhere near the player that he was a few years back. But you have Deshaun Watson. And finding a competent quarterback in the league today is very difficult to do. I've said this before on the show. You think there's 7-plus billion people walking around planet Earth, and we have 4 or 5 elite quarterbacks in the NFL right now. And I think Deshaun Watson is very good. So you have that if you take the Houston job. Detroit, I don't know. That's probably the least attractable job in my mind. But then you look at the new openings today. And we can start with the Jets. No, they don't have the number one pick. But I think they have a very bright GM. And I like what the Jets have built as far as an offensive line. I love Mekhi Becton. They did spend a lot of stupid money on Le'Veon Bell. C.J. Mosley didn't play this year. You know, this team won two. They went 2-14 very easily. Could have been 5-11. I don't believe that this job is in the same tier as, say, the Chargers and the Jaguars. And that's what I've narrowed it down to as far as the two most desirable jobs that are open. I don't believe there's any doubt that of the jobs, the Chargers, who were 7-9 and very easily, again, could have won 10, 11 games this year, just like they could have last year, I don't have any doubt that's the most talent in the NFL. And when you look at what they bring back at quarterback, that's got to excite you. I mean, Justin Herbert is the real deal. When I watch Justin Herbert, he makes throws that are jaw-dropping. He makes throws that only three or four guys in the league can make. I think he's that good. And when you look at the injury to Joe Burrow and you see the struggles of Tua, you have to wonder if the Chargers got the best quarterback in the draft class last year. It's very early to tell, I understand that, but it's become a very logical question to ask. Did they get the best quarterback in the draft class last season? Right now, based off of everything, I'd have to say, yeah, well, look, he's better than Tua. All right, and we don't know if Joe Burrow is going to play next year, and we don't know if Joe Burrow is ever going to look like what he once looked like this year for the Bengals. So, yeah, it's a fair question to ask. The problem with this Charger team is finishing games. And special team-wise, they were a dumpster fire. And I can't think, out of the three main aspects, offense, defense, and special teams, that should be the easiest to correct in one offseason, shouldn't it? The Chargers ranked last in the league in special teams. They missed 12 kicks. They missed three extra points and nine field goals. And they had three punts blocked. Two of those went back for a touchdown. And they had a blocked field goal return for a touchdown. And as far as the punting average, it's the worst net in the NFL. And this team still went 7-9. You fix special teams in one offseason, you're looking at a team that can win 10, 11 games. And again, I love what they have at quarterback. And you also have to look at salary cap. You have to look at the position that teams are in. Now, I think you can overvalue the salary cap of the NFL. It seems like it's a myth. You know, you see teams jump around it so often. But the fact of the matter is, a 7-9 Charger team, you look at top 10. Okay, let's look at the top 10 teams with the most cap space going into 2021. Outside of the Miami Dolphins and the Indianapolis Colts, the Chargers are the team that is probably best built to contend next year. You could throw San Francisco in there as well. The Chargers are going to have roughly $30 million in cap space next season. That's what they're on tap for right now. Other teams in that top 10, I mean, the Jags, the Jets, the Patriots, the Bengals, the Washington football team, really outside of the Dolphins and the 49ers, I think that you're looking at a team that is best set up and they have the most talent out of any coaching vacancy that is open at the moment. So if you're looking for a coach to put you over the hump right now, manage the game a little bit better, you have a proven coach, yeah, I say you roll with the Chargers. I say the Chargers may be the most attractable job. Now, if you flip that and you want to bring in a team builder, and that's what Urban Meyer would be, right? If you were to pay this guy $12 million a year, you're looking for A, a culture change. You're looking for B, someone that can build a team and someone that can mold college football players. And I don't know if anyone's been better at that than Urban Meyer. And if that's what you want, Jacksonville might be the most attractable job. Talent-wise, nowhere near what's happening with the Chargers. Not even close. Okay, but let's look at this. This is a team that has the number one overall pick. So Trevor Lawrence is sitting right there, and if you want to go Justin Fields, I know that was a talk that popped up over the weekend. Fine, whoever you want, he's there for you at number one. Your franchise quarterback is there. You have an additional first-round pick from the Rams in the Jalen Ramsey deal. And as far as cap space moving into next year, you have $80 million in cap space. I mean, you look at what they've done as far as some of the players they moved on from. Ngakoue, Calais Campbell, Jalen Ramsey. They've gotten rid of a lot of these dollar amounts, right? You have the opportunity to take this franchise and make it your own. Build it the way you want to build it. That's not the case with the Chargers. So I really think when you answer the question, what's the most attractable job? What are you looking for? You want a veteran coach that can get you over the hump right now? It's the Chargers, no doubt. They have the most talent out of any of the six teams looking for a coach. But if you want to build, I mean, the Jets are nowhere near in the spot of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Nowhere near. Now, the Jets do have 70 mil, but they don't necessarily have the draft capital that the Jags have. And the Jags have moved on from a lot of very compelling contracts. The only problem with the Jacksonville job is that Shad Khan said today that he was in control of all of the roster movement and he would remain in control of all roster decisions. I'm so intrigued, though, by the idea of Urban Meyer going to Jacksonville. I want to see it. I really want to see it because, again, the track record of Urban Meyer is so different than any other coach that we've seen make that jump. Barry Switzer, Jimmy Johnson, these guys won championships. Super Bowl championships, national championships. Barry Switzer ran the Cowboys into the ground. Jimmy Johnson did not have the track record of Urban Meyer. I think when you look at college football coaches, Urban Meyer is a top five greatest college football coach of all time. The guy had a winning record at Bowling Green in two seasons. He took the Utes to the Fiesta Bowl. Alex Smith was the number one pick in the NFL draft. That was because of Urban Meyer. He's able to evolve talent. Then he goes to Florida. They were not in great shape when he took over that job. They win multiple national championships. He goes to Ohio State. Remember, we were talking here on this show about the idea of Ohio State getting the death penalty. And maybe that was a little too far-fetched with everything that was going on, but they were in a lot of trouble. Urban Meyer takes over. They win a national championship. He's been connected to that job. So is Ryan Day, the current head coach at Ohio State right now. So I like the idea of Jacksonville going the route of a college coach or someone that's familiar with the college game simply because you have free reign to build. And I'll tell you the other thing about going the route of a college coach. You want a culture change? You bring in a respected college football coach. They're player coaches. I mean, they really are. Pete Carroll's a player's coach. Part of the reason he has had continued success in Seattle, he is a player's coach. It makes sense to go that route, doesn't it? So it's fascinating to me that Jacksonville is fixated on an Ohio State coach. And I think the other aspect that you have to consider if they go that route is Justin Fields at the number one spot. I think you have to consider that. So again, I guess I'm bouncing around the idea of the question, what's the most attractable? If you want to win right now, it's the Chargers job, and it's not even close. The Jaguars are set up best to build long-term wise. Jets could have been that. Could have been similar to that position. They just won too many games, and maybe that was a downfall for Adam Gase. I don't know. But again, line me up for the Chargers job second. I got to go Jacksonville. Least attractable out of the six that are open right now, it's probably the Lions. Yeah, I would probably have to say the Detroit Lions. Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia's vision just did not work out. You have an aging quarterback who has been beat up, been roughed up the majority of his career because you put together an offensive line that stinks. And really, when I look at the weapons that they have offensively, it's tough to rebuild. And if you got to move on from Matt Stafford, I mean, you're starting at square one with not a lot of capital. I think that's the least attractable job. And then I would probably go Houston. And then it's a toss-up between the Jets and the Falcons, but at the top of my list, it's the Chargers and Jaguars. And I think you can approach that, again, from two different ways, depending on what you're looking for. We're going to break for just a moment. Again, Black Monday, six coaches out. Well, three today. Jags, Jets, Chargers, Lions, Texans, Falcons. We're going to break for just a moment. College football talk coming up when we return right here on Drive Time Sports.
Welcome back to Drive Time Sports on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM, Eastern Utah's home for the Utah Jazz. Stop, look and listen.
about a week away from the College Football National Championship, Alabama-Ohio State. I like Alabama to win this game. I like them to win fairly convincingly as well. Right now the spread's 7.5, Alabama. I would take Bama to cover that. Over-under is 75. That's an intriguing one because this Alabama defense is not great. They gave up a lot of points against Florida. Justin Fields, one of the most dynamic quarterbacks. Yeah, I'd probably take the over on that. I think we have a very high-scoring game, but this Alabama offense is just so legit. And so we have plenty of time to preview the national championship, but I want to talk about the two teams that were ousted. And the buildup for the college football playoff, everybody agreed that Bama was number one, Clemson was number two. There were no arguments there. The biggest problem that people had was A, putting Ohio State in at 6-0. Dabo Swinney was probably the biggest. He had a huge objection to that. He had him number 11. And I don't think he had them number 11 because of the talent. Anyone who understands anything about football can watch that team and say, that's a very solid, good football team, but they only played six games. Right, so I believe Ohio State should have been there. There was a big problem at number four with Notre Dame, and there's a logic in college football that I just don't quite understand, and that's the idea of, we've seen this team lose on the big stage before, so they shouldn't be there. That makes absolutely no sense to me. I mean, Chris Tyree, who's one of the leading running backs for Notre Dame, a freshman, he was 10 years old when Notre Dame played Alabama in the national championship in 2012. Doesn't have any bearing on this season. All right, we've got to get rid of that logic, and I know where it comes from. It comes from the idea that mid-majors do not have a chance to compete for a national championship. That's what it boils down to. Cincinnati gave Georgia all they could handle. Thoroughly entertaining game. They come out on the short end of the stick, but Cincinnati was one of the teams that were slighted. And I think it strikes a nerve here in the state of Utah for a couple of reasons. For one, the University of Utah was in the conversation on two separate occasions. Once under Urban Meyer, when they got Pitt in the Fiesta Bowl. It was a bad matchup for Utah. They blew out Pitt. Everybody knew that was what was going to happen. But that was also the BCS era, and Utah never really got major consideration to play for the national championship. Also in the BCS era, when they beat Alabama in the Sugar Bowl under coach Kyle Whittingham and with quarterback Brian Johnson. So Utah joins the Pac-12, and things have been a little different since. They've been in the national championship conversation or the playoff conversation one time. That was last year. So I think it strikes a nerve with people in the state when you see a team like Cincinnati or a Coastal Carolina who lost to Liberty and their bowl game, you see these schools not get major consideration. And then you see a team like Notre Dame, who, in my mind, had every right to be in the college football playoff. And it's not because I'm a Notre Dame homer. I'm just looking at it realistically. They went undefeated through their ACC season, and they knocked off Clemson. No, I don't care if Trevor Lawrence played or not in that game. The Irish deserved a right to be in that contest. But it strikes a nerve in the state of Utah. And it's the same concept with BYU. The Cougars were undefeated. They had no chance of getting to the college football playoff. None. Even when they were unbeaten before the loss to Coastal Carolina, they had no chance of getting in. The playoff committee made that abundantly clear. They would have taken a two-loss team over an undefeated BYU squad. They weren't getting in. And I almost believe it would have been the same thing for Cincinnati. I think the committee would have put a two-loss team in. They would have put a two-loss Florida team in, especially had they beaten Alabama. They'd have put that team in. They would have, over the likes of a Cincinnati. And Notre Dame gets on the stage, and they were blown out by Clemson 2 years ago, 30-3. They were blown out by Alabama in the national championship in 2012. And I thought that Notre Dame was competitive in this game against Alabama. But I think the biggest misconception is that it's a Notre Dame problem. And I'm telling you, that's not the case. There's a tier system in college football. There's elite, and that's what Alabama is. They are elite. And I can go ahead and throw Clemson in that category, and I think you can throw Ohio State in that category because track records over the last 6-7 years speak to it. then you have a good tier. And there's a big difference between being great and being good. There's a big difference. And that's where Notre Dame falls. They're good. They're not great. They're not going to dazzle you. They don't have the explosiveness on the perimeter the same way as, say, in Alabama. They just don't. And Alabama took full advantage of that in that contest. And when you look down the rankings in college football, there are several teams that fall in that same category with Notre Dame. Same category. Texas A&M, Oklahoma, Florida, Georgia. These teams are good. They're not great. They are not elite. A&M got the win over North Carolina, and that was probably the best bowl game that I watched all weekend. The Orange Bowl against North Carolina. Final score is 41-27, but that was a back-and-forth game. And seeing North Carolina in their biggest bowl game since the 50s was compelling in itself. But, look, Notre Dame and Texas A&M, in my mind, the talent level, it's similar. Same can be said for Oklahoma. They lost two games in the Big 12 this year. You know, Iowa State, three-loss team with Matt Campbell. Very good football team. I mean, they took it to Oregon. But ultimately, they're good. They're not great. And so what I'm seeing in college football is the drop-off from 3 to 4. It's pretty substantial. And I think once you move from 4 to 10, the drop-off there, it may not be huge, but there's a big drop-off there, too. Look outside the top 10 this year. I mean, Northwestern competed with Ohio State. They don't have the horses to roll with the Buckeyes for four quarters. We saw it. They don't have the horses offensively to do it. And anyone who tells me that it's not about talent, that is certainly not the case. Because if you look at how Alabama beats teams, they do it with perimeter play. And the statistics are absolutely mind-boggling when you look at the top 500 recruits over the last 5 years. When you look at what Alabama and Clemson and Ohio State are bringing in, it's going to be very, very difficult for people to contend, for other teams to contend with this. Let's just look at this. The top 100 recruits over the past 5 years, because that equals out to be 500. And we're going to look just at the teams that were playing in the college football playoffs. Alabama had 49 of the top 500 recruits over the last 5 years. Ohio State and Clemson were both in the high 30s. Notre Dame had 10. Okay? No team has won the national championship in the playoff era without having one top five recruiting class through a four-year cycle. Notre Dame's average was 13.8 during that cycle. Now, Brian Kelly has done a terrific job of getting the most out of his talent. But you know who else falls in the same tier as Notre Dame when I mention these numbers? Any team that you want to make an argument should have been in that number four spot, Texas A&M. You couldn't put Florida in. You just couldn't. And they lost to a horrible LSU team. Cincinnati doesn't have anywhere near the talent of Notre Dame, much less Alabama, Ohio State, or Clemson. And then you start taking a look at the leading tacklers, the leaders in receiving yards, the rushing leaders. They're nowhere near top 300 recruits consistently for any other school outside of Clemson, LSU, and Ohio State, Clemson, Alabama, and Ohio State. LSU last year was a different beast. They had one of the best quarterbacks in the country. They did not recruit Joe Burrow. He was a transfer. And so you look at the two schools, Notre Dame and Clemson. Clemson's going to be just fine. I think it's going to take Notre Dame a couple of years before they get back to competing for a playoff spot. Clemson will be just fine as long as Dabo Swinney wants to adapt. Dabo refuses to look down the transfer route. And I'm curious to see if that changes, because kids can leave school without facing any sort of issues with eligibility this year due to COVID-19. Clemson's going to be just fine. That number four spot, I think you're going to continue to see Bama, Clemson, and Ohio State in the conversation. I think that's going to continue. But anyone that gets into that conversation is going to have problems. It's not just a Notre Dame problem. There's tiers in college football. And right now, Bama is at the top. Ohio State is right there with them. I mean, look at the success that Lincoln Riley has had molding quarterbacks. guess what? The last three Oklahoma quarterbacks that were Heisman contenders, you know, Kyler Murray, who won the Heisman, Baker Mayfield, you know, those two, to go along with Jalen Hurts, he didn't recruit any of those guys. They were transfers. Kyler Murray, he came over from Texas A&M. Baker Mayfield, that's, you know, well documented. Jalen Hurts, he was molded at Alabama. Lincoln Riley had success with those three players, got them to the next level, but he didn't recruit them. Right now, Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, they are in a world of their own. And any other team that fills that fourth spot, they're going to have problems. It's just the way it works in college football. Let's take one more quick commercial break. We'll come back and put the final touches on this edition of Drive Time Sports right here on 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Since they want to know. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 750 AM.
Time to close out this first edition of 2021 right here on Drive Time Sports. We'll do that by talking local sports. We just have a couple of more minutes. But the first RPI rankings were released today for high school basketball. It's not the same as it has been in the past because you haven't had that grueling non-region season. At least it doesn't feel like it. It seems like it's been a little bit more sporadic. But as far as the first rankings on the boys' side of the court, number one team in the state is Grantsville. There's only two unbeaten teams left in the 3A classification. Grantsville at number one, they're 6-0. Grand is at number four. They're at 9-0. Carbon comes in the first rankings at 8. Things could have looked a lot different for Carbon had they picked up a win over Juab. 1 point loss, Juab is number three. I think that's a great sign for Carbon. There are gauge games, right, that you can look at the RPI, and things are going to change once region play kicks up. For instance, the Emory Spartans, they're at 2-5, number 14. But number two is Manti, and Emory had Manti on the road in the fourth quarter. They held a lead. And you look at some of the other games that Emory held second half leads in, just could not hold on. Juan Diego was one. It's an upper division squad. I mean, that's kind of been the reoccurring theme for Emory. So a lot of positives, I think, for both Carbon and Emory sitting in a good spot as far as the first RPI rankings. Now, on the girls' side, Carbon comes in at number three. Lady Dinos highly ranked. There are four teams in the 3A classification on the girls' side that have one loss. South Sevier, Richfield, Carbon, Judge Memorial, and that's the way they're ranked. South Sevier number one, Richfield two, Carbon three, Judge four. Carbon's lone loss on the season, it came at the hands of Grantsville. Grantsville is number five. So even at that, it's a quality loss for Carbon. Emory is currently number seven. Now, they've just played in six games so far this year, and they're 3-3. But the Lady Spartans have had a very challenging schedule up to this point in time. They've played a lot of upper classification squads. Their lone loss was in the 3A division, it was a 7-point loss to Judge Memorial, who's number four. So playing the upper classifications, it definitely helps out. 1A, can't forget about 1A. Pinnacle at 4-3, they come in at number 12. Green River at 2-5 on the boys' side, they come in at number 15. And as far as the girls are concerned, Green River number four right now with a record of 4-4. Pinnacle at 1-6, they come in at number 12. No undefeated teams throughout the 1A classification all the way through. So that's a look at the RPI. You can get the complete RPI rankings right now at CastleCountryRadio.com. That's going to do it for us. We will be back to do it again tomorrow. It'll be Football Tuesday. We'll start breaking down the NFL playoffs. Black Monday, it only took three jobs. It's not too bad. We've had a lot worse in the past. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Be safe. I am out.